Hola, buenos días, saludos a todos y a todas, espero que estén muy bien. Otro episodio de Raqueteando como esto la hacen aquí en GW5 Network en San Juan, Puerto Rico. Gracias, dale subscribe siempre y comparte, hagan comentarios, siempre los leemos y los recibimos con mucho cariño de todos y todas. Mi reloj, este excelente, hermoso reloj de Pure Soul, que no solamente me viste a veces, sino que me da estos accesorios bien chulos en el viejo San Juan, que siempre está pendiente de mí. Así que gracias por eso. Y qué más, GW5 Network, el espacio para los podcasts en Puerto Rico. Dale subscribe y no solamente veas este, ve todos los otros que tenemos en este estudio. Hoy, algo bien interesante. Bueno, un par de cosas. Esta entrevista va a ser en inglés. Así que ustedes me van a decir al final si lo hice bien, si yo en el colegio toda la saqué en inglés. Bautista Carolina, vamos a ver, mis Febres y mis Alicea, entre otros, y mis Delgado, entre otras maestras que me dieron. Y nada, vamos a ver cómo fluye hoy, pero sí, porque aquí hablamos francés, inglés, portugués y por supuesto español. Pero hoy toca inglés, así que al final me dicen cómo me fue. Hoy estamos con la casa pequeña, porque este podcast, poco a poco estamos viendo que aquí es que es para deportes de raqueta. Tenis, pickleball, paddle, beach tennis, de todo un poco. Y hoy tenemos un elite coach que está rankeado en pickleball en Estados Unidos y está aquí con nosotros hoy. Julio Rivera, bienvenido, Julio.
Wow.
Welcome.
That was a great introduction.
We're just getting warmed up, you know? This is just, just a little bit of stuff so you can know what Julio's been done over the years. And as I told you, grateful that you're here with us today. For me, it's always an honor to just talk with people that have, you know, worked all their life in tennis and now pickleball. So thank you. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me here and giving me the opportunity to speak to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, porque en Puerto Rico el pickleball se está conociendo, pero tenemos que conocer también los puertorriqueños que están aquí y fuera de nuestro país haciendo y dando cátedra. So, let's start from the beginning. You started playing since 10, tennis.
Yes, and my background is tennis.
Tennis, so it started out just like your parents taught you or just was you more interested in the sport?
Well, I was born in Manhattan, in New York.
In New York. In that other Puerto Rican country.
Where?
Of Manhattan.
Yes. My grandmother was part of the Great Migration in the 1950s.
Good.
So they migrated to the Bronx, where most of the Puerto Ricans at that time were migrating to.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in the Bronx and then moved to the North Bronx, which was just a little bit different than where we were all at. It was still project housing, like caseria, the projects, but it was a nicer projects and near the nicer projects, there was a tennis court and I was always interested.
Huh.
I didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the Bronx, you played basketball, you played handball
or baseball,
or
right?
Baseball. I was good at handball and I'd always walk by the park and I'd see tennis and then I would see some people playing, but I didn't really know what it was. Then, a few years later, my dad moved to Long Island.
Okay.
And that's where I met my best friend who was a tennis player.
Hmm.
And he used to play with Arthur Ashe.
Oh, okay. So okay.
We know who Arthur Ashe is, right?
Arthur Ashe. We've shared some images of him on Instagram. And Arthur Ashe, one of the most important players in tennis history. One of the first black men to win Wimbledon, U.S. Open, the stadium, and Billie Jean King Center. It's named after him, Arthur Ashe. So who was your friend? Who was friends with Arthur Ashe?
My friend, his father was the first black police officer in Nassau County.
Huh.
So we have to remember this is the 70s
mm-hmm.
and in New York. So there's still a lot of segregation,
mm-hmm.
It's very odd for people of color mm-hmm. to move to Long Island.
Got
so
it.
There was a very small piece of property, of land where they would let black and Hispanic people live.
Got it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the truth of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
History.
So there were people of color who were more like middle class or striving to be middle class
mm-hmm.
and even higher. We lived across the street from a judge. He was the first black judge.
Wow. Okay.
So we lived across the street from the first black judge in Nassau County. And now we live across the street from the first police officer, black police officer in Nassau County in Long Island. And he wanted his son to play tennis. Mm-hmm. So he was my friend when I moved to Long Island. He was the friend that you meet outside and you play. Mm-hmm. And then he would go away. His father would come out and say, let's go.
Okay.
And they get in the yellow car. Uh-huh. He'd say, that's it. Then I'd always wonder where he was going. Mm-hmm. And finally he told me he was playing tennis, and I used to watch it on TV at this point. This is when John McEnroe, Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett Lloyd, Borg. Mm-hmm. I'm watching this on the only three channels that they had at TV this time. And I was so intrigued. So I asked him, can I play? Can I play? He was like, no. You know, this is too difficult. This, you know, he gave me a list of. So one day I asked his father if I can go out to practice with him.
Okay.
And he was like, no. And so I think that no just kept making me more interested in wanting to go out and play. Uh-huh. So I finally broke him down and asked him to go out and play one day. And he finally felt bad and said, all right, come on. And he took me out and he would feed his son. And he had a younger brother, and he would feed the both the brothers. Uh-huh. This is before the Williams.
For the younger audiences, this is way before the Williams. The Williams sisters, they haven't been born yet.
Right. So he was like the Richard before the Williams sisters.
Yeah. So we should call him King. What's his name?
Yeah. Oh my God. King Mr. Brown.
King Mr. Brown. Boogadoo.
So Mr. Brown, he let me go out and play that day. Mm-hmm. And I picked up the racket and he fed me a few balls, and I had really good hand eye coordination. And he kept feeding me balls, and I would hit, you know, everything that he would feed me. He's like, wow. He's like, you're pretty good. Huh. You know, you should keep playing. Mm-hmm. So, he was like, you should keep playing, but he's not going to play with my sons because I'm trying to get them to be pros, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But that sparked the fire inside of me to learn the sport. So I sought it out in school.
Yeah,
I went to middle school and I sought out the tennis coach. Mm-hmm. And he recruited me. He was the high school coach, and he recruited me for the junior high school and then the high school team.
Cool.
And back then you can play many sports. Now everyone specializes.
Yeah.
But so I played during the season. After that, it was just one of those things that I was just really, really obsessed with.
Yeah.
And with tennis, if you've read Andre Agassi's book, you need a million strokes to perfection. So I started, my partner was the wall. And for many years, I would practice with whoever I could practice with. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any money. We were, you know, barely making it. Mm-hmm. And here I am picking an elite sport.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very odd choice. I could have played basketball or baseball. I was very good in baseball.
Yeah. You have the height too. But I think like sports, like I'm an actor. So I'm convinced now that roles and characters, they choose you. Yeah. And I think the sports, same thing, like it chose you. Because for me, it was the same thing. I mean, I sucked at baseball and basketball. And I picked up the TV one day and I started watching Wimbledon.
Right.
And it just like, what's that about? And then, you know, the rest of history, you know, some of you know. But yeah, it was similar situations that I didn't know what sport was about, but it really intrigued me, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it chose you.
Definitely, because
you were a natural.
It definitely chose me because it was definitely the harder of the two choices or the paths. Uh-huh. It was definitely the harder path. It's definitely the path of non-inclusivity. It's not very inclusive to someone like me. Hmm. It needs a lot of money.
Yeah.
For somebody like me. So I just took that as a challenge. Mm. And I became friends It just so happened that we all became friends, a few of us that all shared the same interest. And when you have a group of people that share the same interest, things really good things can come out, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes bands come out, right?
Yeah, that, totally.
Right? So I had at least a support system, and I would play with my friend Ray whenever his father was not practicing with him. And he would play, and we would practice, and that's how I got good. And then I went to junior college.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to a local 2-year school, and I went with two of my friends from high school. And that was the best 2 years of my life. I still have my best friends to this day.
Okay.
With another 3 other friends, and we're all friends now.
And you still
that
play?
I met on the college. We don't play at all anymore, but we used to probably up to about like 10, 15 years ago, we were playing.
Oh, great.
But we still, you know, we've gone to each other's weddings.
Mm.
You know, we've held each other's children. I mean, those are the bonds that, you know, that we created. And that was through tennis.
Yeah.
And tennis has really given me my whole life, even before pickleball, which has just exploded for me.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for me picking tennis, you know, my life would probably be a lot different.
Wow. So that's a huge statement, because, you know, destiny, what's destiny? You know, everybody has, you know, and how things cross, and a friend of yours, and then something you saw that, you know, intrigued you, and then it led you to, you know, a different path.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, talking about your career and all your achievements. So before going to pickleball, I love history.
Yeah.
So did you ever meet Arthur Ashe?
So,
or saw him?
I did see him, but I didn't get to spend any time with him.
Hmm.
So, but watching such a figure like come through the room, it's really awe inspiring. You see, it's very inspirational. You see somebody who's you know, crossed over color lines and broken a lot of barriers for the sport and for people of color in general. So I didn't get any interaction with him, but I did get to, you know, see him in the room.
I got goosebumps. I don't know about you, because this is history right here we're talking about, and from, you know, firsthand. And I mean, Arthur Ashe, Althea Gibson, of course, the sister of Venus and Serena, a lot of black players that, you know, have gone through a lot to be where they are. And that's really important. That's why history, it's key to understand, you know, what happened back then, what's happening now, and how we can transform, because, you know, bottom line, we're all equal, you know, and that's one of the things that Arthur Ashe fought for. And because that's why he's still so inspiring, you know, his life. So we'll talk more about Arthur. We're going to keep talking about him all this time. So tennis, and then you, in 2010, you created the underground tennis movement. What's that about?
So we fast forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. College.
So we went to college. We started, actually, I left tennis for a little bit.
Okay.
I, at some point while I was in college, I realized that, that it was not going to be, the stage. I was not going to be in front of, you know, thousands of people playing.
Okay.
The bottom line is you're just not good enough. It's very, very
that's
competitive sport.
Something you decided, or you just, you know, realize that?
Well, you realize it. You come to a realization when you take enough losses.
Okay.
And the money runs out.
Right. Too key.
So in tennis, it costs a lot of money. You need to find sponsors. The sponsors want to know why they want to sponsor you. So you really, it's like
you have to deliver.
Just want to help you, and they're giving you money so that you can travel to try to play, you know, play tennis.
Yeah.
So I knew very quickly, especially like I said, I come from a working class family. We work. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, we get up in the morning and we work Monday through Friday all day long. And then Saturday, right, we put the salsa music and we work.
Muy bien. Salsa. Importante. Alegría.
No, that goes no matter where. If we're on the island or we're in the Bronx or we're Long Island. If if you're Boricua, Saturday morning, you know, you're cleaning.
Yeah.
So matter what, I knew that I had to, I had this skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to do something with it. So I started coaching.
Oh, okay.
And that was the, I think the biggest, the pivotal moment in my life that took me and gave me an opportunity to do more and be more, more successful.
Yeah.
You know,
you saw the possibility.
I saw possibilities. Yeah. Yes. You know, of getting up and raising up and raising up and having a better life for myself and for my family and to one day grow a family and be able to do that.
Yeah.
The American dream. Right. So I started teaching, and that was the way that really helped me grow. So
grow in the sport.
I taught for a few years. I was very successful early. I learned really quickly and I took over a lot of positions, and I became a head pro very, very early in my career. I was about 24 years old and I was already a head pro. So, I think the Boricua and me helps me with traffic control and people. So people understood, and they like that kind of aggression. And it was good to make, you know, good for them. And it helped me, be assertive with the clientele, and they loved it.
Yeah.
And
because you can handle, as a Boricua growing up in the Bronx, you know, you come from middle class, you know how to handle every type of people.
Right.
You know, you can, you know,
You maneuver a little bit. You're hard. You're soft. You have to have it all.
Yeah.
So I had it all when I was early, and you know, thank goodness someone recognized it and gave me an opportunity. From there, that opportunity allowed me a job to work on Wall Street for a couple of years, and that's where I took my break from tennis.
Yeah.
And that allowed me to meet my wife and love of my life.
Important. I mean, right? We needed that break from tennis, you know.
Well, you know, tennis becomes a, you know, a job, and then it is a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, you decide like, wow, I need to try to do something else. You know, I went to college. I want to see, you know, what else is there to be.
Got it.
So I went into the financial world, and it wasn't a good fit for me. It wasn't a good fit. Although I did okay, but it did allow me to meet my wife.
Beautiful. And if you guys have seen my Instagram stories and Raqueteando and on my personal handle, I played pickleball for the first time a few weeks ago. It was with his wife.
That's right.
She's a, say, she's a fucking great pickleball player, and also his daughter who's here. Hola. Both of them are great pickleball players. And, you know, the video that I shared, it was with his wife. So, you know, it runs in the family.
Yes.
It runs in the family.
Yeah. Yes. So I my wife, when I met her, lived in Los Angeles.
Okay.
She lived in Los Angeles. Orange County, to be precise. Laguna. I met her. We dated from New York to Los Angeles
for
about 6 months. And she said, I have a great idea. Why don't you pack up your stuff and move out here?
Ah, that's a great idea.
So I did.
Well, and empowered woman making the decisions. Why don't you come? Why don't you come? Vente para acá, muchacho. That's
it. Basically, she said that. And it wasn't a hard sell for me. And that's it. I packed up and we started our family.
Beautiful.
And we started our family. It is a great ride. We have two beautiful daughters. I have a grandson now.
Grandson?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How does that feel? I'm still on the first level. I'm a father of a five-year-old. Hola, Nicanor. So you're a granddad.
I'm a granddad, and it feels great. It really feels great. It's just, it really changes your perception or your perspective of your child. Like you really look at your child in a different light.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. He's about to be a year. We're going to go see him in Chicago this week. So
are you going to teach him pickleball?
Yeah, I think I'm going to teach him all of it. Maybe some paddle.
Some paddle as well.
I mean, everything. My youngest daughter is an accomplished pickleball player, as you know, but her background is in tennis as well. She was a Division II tennis recruit to go to college.
Oh, wow.
So she put in a lot of tennis hours herself, and that's why she's
such a good player.
Yeah. So I was out in LA for a while raising the kids, and we moved up to Santa Monica.
Beautiful.
And when I started working in Santa Monica, that's when things changed. And I got the fire for tennis again. Well, just even before that, I was playing way more tennis again, just down in Orange County, but just really playing a lot of regular tennis. I move up to LA and I just meet a community of tennis players. And again, it's the same thing. It's like when you meet a community, and you get into that community, it really empowers you. It really raises you and it really brings your spirit up.
Yeah. And it supports you. And also it's like, you're not the only one thinking this way, you know?
Correct.
You know?
Yeah. We sort of felt like we were kind of alone down there. Also, you know, Orange County is very, very Americanized. It's very, you know, gringo white. And we needed to have at least a little more color.
Yeah.
When we, so we moved, you know, we moved the
to
girls
the
up.
To Santa Monica, the beach in LA.
And LA is more multicultural. There's people from many different walks of life. So we thought it was a good idea to do that. The other idea was to go back to Long Island and live with my parents. And I mean,
Santa Monica, the weather is way better than Long Island, you know?
So moving out there to Santa Monica opened up my tennis world. Again, I was asked to start teaching some more, and that's where my world opened up. I started teaching. I didn't go the traditional route where I could have went to a country club, but actually in Santa Monica, on the west side of LA, in the hills, there's the highest concentration of tennis courts available, and they're all private. So now there's a whole nother world.
Wow.
And I see this as like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
I could either work for, you know, the man, or I can go out and work privately and do a private business.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Beautiful. And this is 2010?
This is 2010.
Okay. So, wow. You've done a lot in such a small amount of time. So then 2010, you're playing tennis. And then 2018, we're going to skip 8 years. 2018
So during 2010, I'm one of the private residents I'm teaching at, and I still am teaching at, is the home of Donna Mills.
Donna Mills, ahí está la foto, la actriz rubia que está por ahí. Donna Mills, she's an actress. She's 81.
She's 83.
Three.
Yeah.
My mom's age. Mi mamá tiene 83, la tira al medio. She looks amazing.
She's beautiful. And beautiful inside and outside.
She's an actress. I know she's done a lot of work in soap opera, CBS, I'm sorry.
Knots Landing.
Knots Landing, which is the main where she's worked a lot. And as you know, soap operas in the States, they last years.
So she was on TV when they were getting 60 million views a night. How about that? Would you like 60 million views?
60 millones de views. I would like that to Roqueteando. That's the goal.
Right?
We have many goals.
Yeah.
So, wow. 60 millones. What the fuck?
Right.
Wow. Yeah. And she was taking classes with you.
So she still takes classes with me to this day. We still play. She plays 5 to 6 times a week.
A week?
And I think, again, that is the key to longevity.
Longevity.
To living a long, prosperous life. You have to keep moving. You have to keep moving.
Señores, no lo dije yo, lo dijo un elite coach.
Yeah.
Yo lo compartimos en las redes. We shared a video saying that tennis helps you live longer.
Absolutely.
It's proven, so that's a beautiful example.
Yes.
Donna
Absolutely.
Mills.
Absolutely. So 83, she's still going.
Wow.
And it's great to see. So
yeah.
And I'm sure she'll keep going.
Yeah. Julio también, we're going to skip, there's so many things to talk about with Julio. You also, I read that you also coach 2-time Academy Award winner, Hilary Swank.
Yes. Hilary, yes.
Hilary.
Yes.
Para los que no, ¿verdad? No lo tienen ahí, Hilary Swank ganó el Oscar por Boys Don't Cry, un trabajo espectacular que si no lo han visto, run and see it. And then Million Dollar Baby, dirigida por Clint Eastwood. Ella es una... I really like her. I love her work. I would hope she will do theater. I would love to see her on live stage. But you've coached her. Is she as intense as disciplined as she is with acting?
She's very intense.
I follow her on Instagram. She's really cool.
Her training, everything she does, is with purpose. And just, it's very direct. and she's very confident. And you know, she has the muscles to back
it up. She has a great body. Also, you coach Lindsay Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac.
I used to coach at Lindsay's home.
Actually,
and I coached his wife and his children.
Okay.
And Lindsay, as you know, is from Fleetwood Mac, and he is an incredible guitarist. I would say he's a genius. During our classes, sometimes he would come down just with his guitar and pick at his guitar while he's practicing and we're having tennis match.
Okay, so you have a private soundtrack.
Yes.
With his, esa es una foto del músico Lindsay también, que está un músico, ¿verdad? Entrado. He's about, he's 70 something, right?
He's around almost 80, 80, I believe.
Yeah, now. Same thing. Yeah. And he still plays as
he's
well.
He's not playing anymore.
Okay.
He's, you know, he's just sticking to music.
To music.
Yeah. And, you know, he's doing well.
Yeah.
When my daughter, Mina, was really young, she played with his daughter. And she would have a sleepover at Lindsay Buckingham's home. And she didn't know who Lindsay Buckingham was. So one night they were at a sleepover. We come home, my wife and I are so excited. Oh my God, you got to stay at Lindsay's house. How was it? How was it? And she doesn't know. She's like, yeah, it was okay.
This guy, so, my friend's dad.
Yeah, my friend's dad. So I was like, so what'd you guys do? She's like, well, we, you know, we played, you know, all kinds of different games. And then, what my, his dad, her dad would just come in and play the guitar, you know? And we're like,
okay.
We're like, wow. And she's like, yeah, he just played the guitar, but it was cool.
It was cool.
Yeah. He has a great arcade upstairs. She didn't know.
No, that's fine.
What a privilege and an honor to be able to just, you know, spend some time with them.
Those people and other clients you've had. So as a coach, Julio, I've started playing pickleball just now, but we have so many here in Puerto Rico, pickleball is picking up. What tips can you give us as a coach that can improve people's performance on pickleball? Like, few tips you can give us.
Well,
this is like a mini private lesson. He's not charging, but
I won't send you an invoice.
No.
first and foremost, just remember that you're trying to have fun. That's the number one rule. That's the one thing that drew me to pickleball myself. I saw tennis as becoming more of, you know, of a job and a little bit more of an isolated kind of thing. Pickleball allows you the opportunity to be with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think humans, we really crave community and contact.
Yeah.
You know, there's a very few of us that don't, but I think for the most part, we all do. So enjoy that part that pickleball brings to you.
Yeah.
Also, pickleball allows people who don't have any skill at all, any racket skill set, no extensive racket skill set, to be able to pick up the paddle and be able to learn how to play.
So it's easier to learn.
It's definitely easier to learn. And it's very hard to master. Don't get me wrong.
Right?
There's many levels to it. But that's the beauty of it, is that people, even in their middle age and older, can still learn the game of pickleball. So now, as you're learning this game and you're having fun, there'll be nuance for you to learn. And that's where you pick up from other friends, from the YouTube, from coaches. There's small nuance that you have to learn because it's a specific game with different parameters. But I think the biggest tip I can tell people is always have fun. Be loose.
Relaxed.
be fluid, be relaxed, and try to enjoy yourself.
Yeah. I mean, when you enjoy yourself, it doesn't feel like you're working. You're just being present.
Well, that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, you play a game to 11 and then somebody's going to put their paddles or they say, hey, let's play again. And and that's the joke with pickleball, is, you know, you could have your bag on your shoulder and you're walking out and somebody's like, one more game. And you look.
Why not?
And you put the bag down and you go out and play and you're with your friends. And I think, again, what really attracted me to pickleball was the scale of it. Tennis was very small scale.
Got it.
On a tennis court, you only have two people or four people. Mm-hmm. It was very hard. On a pickleball court, you can put four pickleball. On a tennis court, you can put four pickleball courts. That's four. That's eight. That's 12. Eight. That's 16 people. Wait. That's 16 people with another 16 people that are waiting.
Yeah.
So now the people that are waiting, they're talking and this and that and spilling the tea and all these things. And that's how the community starts to grow. Build.
It multiplies.
And that's what I took. And I saw it early. I saw this in 2018. And I said, wow, this is crazy. This has the, potential to explode.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my life, I was right.
Yeah, you were right. I mean, you've been right a couple of things.
I don't know,
your wife, your daughter.
Yes, you're 100% right. But this time I was early to the
game.
I was early to the game this time. And I understood that that pickleball was going to be here for a while because I saw what it had, the impact it was having on me and what was happening around. When I first started pickleball, it was mostly older people, people in their 60s and their 70s, some people in their 50s, and it was more of a retirement sport.
Got it.
And it started to pick up and they became organized because I think the older people started it. I think they were really organized and that helped the younger people start picking it up.
There was some sort of infrastructure.
There was a start of infrastructure, correct.
Yeah.
So then that just started to explode. So now we had the younger people, some of the younger people. So like I'm saying like the 30s and 40s.
Okay.
They're playing. And then, pow, the pandemic comes.
Got it.
And now the pandemic changes everything.
Everything.
Because now people are locked down. People cannot go anywhere. But you can put a pickleball court on your driveway. You can put a pickleball court in the street. There's many places you can put the pickleball court. So now you have younger people
playing
it.
Or just interested in it.
They're interested and playing and filling time. And that was the resurgence of tennis, if you remember.
I know. Well, people could play tennis during the pandemic because there was no physical contact.
Right. So this is what's sparked the resurgence, at least here in the United States, in tennis, because quite honestly, tennis was starting to fizzle here in the U.S. So it also, it sparked this resurgence of tennis in the country. Because when I started teaching pickleball right before the pandemic, I can get a pickleball court anytime. Because, I could put my court on top of a tennis court. And there wasn't anybody really playing. As soon as the pandemic started, there was the pickleball wars.
Okay, right. Like Bad Bunny tickets.
Just like Bad Bunny tickets.
Tú sabes, como que, actually, if somebody has one ticket or two, I'm here, Modesto, I'm a Gen X, I want to see Bad Bunny, FOMO, totalmente, fear of missing out.
The girls went on Sunday, it was a great show.
Yeah, did? Oh, yeah. Man, yeah. I'm so jealous, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. So, yeah, I can imagine,
So, So I saw that potential of like this could be really big during the pandemic, and I started to kind of formalize my coaching as well as playing. Like I said, everything was organized. So now there's categories, there's professional, there's all these, and all the way down, and you can play national tournaments, and you can travel all over the country. So I said, I'm in. I want to get in, and when I started with a group of pros that were all, again, we were all on the same page and we all wanted to get ourselves better so that we can be more competitive. And I was very lucky to have a group of friends and that's what we did. And even in the pandemic, we would rent a tennis court like Airbnb. People were Airbnb their tennis courts. And then tape the lines, and then pros and people who are aspiring to play tournaments would all get together we'd get together like twice a week on a Wednesday and a Saturday and practice for 6 hours.
Wow.
And you had to learn. You have to learn. Like I said before, you have to hit a million shots. You have to learn. You can't just say, hey, I play and now I'm going to go teach. No, you have to spend all, you have to spend as much time. And the pandemic afforded us a lot of time to actually learn how to play. So I played with the top players, the Ben Johns and the likes.
Wow.
I was never competitive against them. I'm just saying I played with them.
With them.
So,
yeah.
And I got to see a lot of the pros that are on TV now playing. Mm-hmm. I got to see them as amateurs and we've practiced together. And that's what gave me the opportunity when they formed Major League Pickleball. Mm-hmm. That's how I got the opportunity to coach one of the teams in 2023.
Wow. So, you know, it was, you know, perfect timing also, you know.
Definitely.
Pandemic, you know.
Yes.
It was sad, of course. I mean, we're not saying it was great, but it led to and it opened up so many doors for everybody, you know, not only personally, but professionally as well. And also on 2022, you'd were director of the Pickleball and Tennis Center in Santa Monica.
Yes.
And also you teach in Brentwood as well.
So that is the whole area itself. Yeah. So it's called the West Side of LA.
West Side, yes. I lived in LA for a while.
So that's, you know, that's the Brentwood area, the Palisades, which is no more because of the fire.
Yeah.
Correct. And Santa Monica and some, you know, neighboring neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called the West Side of tennis. So of tennis, of West Side.
Oh, West Side, yeah.
Tell me again the question.
No, I mean, I was just recapping on, you know, 2022, you were the director of
2022
Santa Monica Pickleball and Tennis Player. So you've grown not only as a coach, but also as, you know, as an organizer, as a, somebody who, as you said, you saw the future and then you took it, you know, you took it and you ran with it. And now you're also organizing clubs and being a leader, a true leader in pickleball in the States.
Papo, lo que yo traigo aquí es filigrana. Esto es melaza, mazacote. Lo que traemos en Raqueteando es lo mejor. Así que díganle a todo el mundo que este es el podcast para deportes de raqueta.
I'm just saying, you know, that
I
brought the best and I'm truly grateful for you and our friend in common, Pili Montilla. Hola, Pili.
Hola, Pili.
That actually introduced me to Julio. So, yeah, I was just saying, you know, the things you've done.
So, yeah, I started in 2022. I started with a partner, the Santa Monica Pickleball Center.
Mm-hmm.
It was a friend of mine that I've known for a long time in the tennis world. I've been watching my progress and he's shown some interest and we decided to partner up and build a community, a private community. And we've done a great job. We're still going and that's allowed us to start another facility that's in Santa Monica right now.
Beautiful.
And we have seven pickleball courts and we'll have 2 to 3 padel courts as well.
Paddle. We're going to talk about paddle soon. Yes.
And it's, you definitely have to speak about paddle.
Yeah, it's just getting started in PR.
It's coming. Yeah, I've played here a few times. Here. I played at the Riviera.
Uh-huh.
Riviera. And then, where did I play? A drop.
Drop center.
Yeah.
City.
And they're very, very nice. And it was a lot of fun. So I see that paddle is growing as well.
Yes.
So it's not the same way as pickleball for the United States.
Yeah.
But it is coming.
It's
so,
coming.
My partners and I, you know, we see that. And, you know, we've built a situation. So that's where we are right now.
Beautiful. Yeah. So I've heard also that, you know, like pickleball is growing so much that it's trying to be an Olympic sport. Read it's not going to happen for 2028, but like probably for 2032.
So, have a chance for 2032, yes. The window is still open.
Still open.
But as far as I know it, they still have some obstacles.
Got it.
To overcome. So in order to be in the Olympics, you have to have a national body. You have to have a governing body for each nation.
Okay.
So, like, you know, like in Puerto Rico, you have to have the association
of
for that.
Right? Got it.
There has to be over 75, I believe,
worldwide
across the world to qualify. Along with that, you have to have comprehensive, you have to have drug testing
rules. Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
So right now in the pickle world that's still having paddle wars, like, you know, mm-hmm. which paddle is legal and illegal. Mm-hmm. So right now, and if they don't get their act together, you know, they could miss the window. But I'm very hopeful. Honestly, I really am truly hopeful. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see, you know, all the countries represented and going out there to play pickleball. And if anybody's listening here and if you need a good coach to represent, I would love to hold the flag and walk walking 32. I don't know if I can play at that point, but I can sure coach, you know?
Yeah, that would be amazing. I mean, I'm all for racket sports. Of course, tennis is an Olympic sport, but it would be beautiful that people would be part of.
I think they can get there. I really do. Yeah. I think they can get there. I think padel is closer.
Worldwide, yeah.
So they're closer worldwide at getting there, and they may even get an exemption for 28 where they'll do it as a they kind of show it like some sort of exhibition. Like they did breakdancing.
I was gonna say, like, freaking breakdancing went to last Olympics, and I don't know if you guys remember from that girl from Australia.
Yeah, what was her name? What was it?
Riga.
Oh my God.
Well, I mean, you saw that. I don't know if you guys saw that, but like, come on, people. Come on. Yeah. So let's hope, you know.
Yeah.
If that happens, pickleball, you know, could happen. So we hope that. So
I think the future is really bright for pickleball.
Yeah.
It's still growing. Mm-hmm. As long as it stays inclusive in terms of people being able to pick it up. I mean, every day, new people come into the sport. And I love seeing pickleball here.
Yes.
It's really grown.
It is.
A lot of people are playing tournaments. Mm-hmm. I see there's like tournament almost every month.
Yeah.
Going on. And when I first was playing pickleball in 2019 and I was visiting here, my grandmother lives in Patillas. Mm-hmm. And on the way down to Patilla, we didn't see anything. We just saw, you know, just tennis still. And then fast forward to like the pandemic coming back here to the island, then I started to see things pop up. Mm-hmm. Now here, 2025, you have multiple facilities now, that's all around the island, and they have a nice infrastructure.
Yeah.
They were represented in the World Pickleball.
I know.
So that was really cool to see. And I know the world is coming up again.
Yeah.
So that would be, it would be fun to see. Let's see if, we could do it again.
Let's hope so. When I talked with you, you mentioned that, you know, you're Puerto Rican.
Yes.
But you were born in the States. That you would like to come more to PR and like relate more with Puerto Rico. How's that going? How's been your stay so far this time in Puerto Rico?
Well, this last day is probably the closest to living here on the island that I've had. I've been traveling my whole life to visit family, as most Puerto Ricans from the diaspora, you know, they wind up at some point, you know, coming back and forth, or you know going out to El Campo for like two or 3 weeks, and you know, living the life with no bathrooms, no lights, you know, I remember those days. I've always felt an attachment, a feeling to the island. One of my deepest and biggest regrets is struggling con español.
Yeah,
you know, and I understand más o menos todo, but it's really hard because English was instilled in me as a kid.
Yeah, as a kid.
You know, my parents. They grew up through the civil rights movement. And my mom didn't, you know, want me to go through the same things
that she went through.
They were going through.
Yeah.
And at the time, things were just changed. Things were changing.
Changing. Yeah. So, civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Roberto Clemente, a whole bunch of people. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to remember, like, that was like a weird time, you know, and there was a very big push for assimilation.
Assimilation at the time.
You know, either, you know, assimilate or go home.
Yeah.
Right. Or get out.
It was survival.
So a lot of people, you know, were, okay, well, we're going to assimilate. My mom was, you know, my mom grew up in the States. You know, she's 100% Puerto Rican. My father's 100%. He moved here in 59 when my grandmother brought everybody. So most of them spoke Spanish, but never got anywhere. Couldn't get any opportunities. There was nothing for you. My grandfather was the janitor at the park. There wasn't anything. So my mom spoke English to me.
Yeah.
And she kept me away. And I regret it to now. You know, I'm like, I regret it now. It's really hard. And it was really hard for me to teach my daughter. And my daughter's Spanish the same way. It's very hard. Their Spanish is terrible. But I'm so happy that my youngest is living here because he's getting better.
I mean, it's always time. And also, like, you know, parents do the best they can with the tools they have in the moment, at the time, you know, and it was about survival at that time, you know, and that's what they have to do in order to get you through and for you to be here today with us. So, but no, you still have time. You can come more. I can teach you. I can teach you some Spanish.
Listen, you know, that's what I do all the time. You know, Bad Bunny is teaching me Spanish.
I was going to say,
You know, so it's been a push. During my time away, I've actually worked a little bit in Mexico.
Ah, super.
And so, mi español, you know, it sounds a little bit como mexicano, pero...
It's good. It's Spanish.
It's Spanish. So, actually, the worst critics of my Spanish is my family. And that's what makes it harder. And people who are out there, people on the island... You got to give people, you got to give us a chance.
Claro.
You got to give us a chance to learn it back and to speak it. I was ridiculed. And now that makes it hard.
Harder. It would block you. You know?
I come for a visit and, mira, ¿por qué no hablas español?
Yeah.
I'm never going to speak if you tell me why I don't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, there's never like, oh, let me help you, you know, or somebody else yells out, enséñale. No. Ah, blah, blah, blah. You know,
making fun of or bullying.
And back and forth and bullying.
Yeah.
So you don't really have, you know, like it's the family that makes it really
harder.
So, and it still happens now. That's why I'm telling you people out here, whoever's got my ear, like be nice. And people are trying and I'm trying.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, you'll speak, and then the second they hear that you mess up one word, and they go right to English.
Right to English.
And then it's right. So, what would you like, sir? And I'm like, man, I'm trying.
Bro. Yeah,
I'm
trying. No, it's a complex situation.
It is.
Because of our political situation that, you know, it's complex. But yeah, it's easy to be kind, and it's easy to be compassionate. On my end, it wasn't until I lived in the States that I really understood that, because I have a whole bunch of friends, Puerto Rican friends and other friends from Latin America, that they grew up in the States. So their first language is English. Same with us. You know, like my first language is Spanish. And, you know, being there, I had to polish my English and learn and practice and blah, blah. So, yeah, it's a matter of empathy and it's a matter of understanding, you know, and not judging our fellow Puerto Ricans. It's a complex situation, it is, but I think there's room to improve.
I totally understand, and I think sometimes that natives believe that's a lack of respect coming from us.
No, it's not.
And, you know, it really isn't, you know.
It's not.
It's just not. You know, if you don't have the opportunity, if you're not put in that place all the time, it's very difficult. And then just, you have to take life circumstances as well. So I'm not going to let that deter me.
No.
And nor will I let my family, you know. So I've always had this strong connection to the island, no matter what. Every time I come here, I feel like I'm home.
You are home, every you know. Time. There's nothing you like know, the
I've
roots.
Never.
Yeah.
You know, and again, like I live out in the U.S. If I want to be around a lot of Puerto Ricans, I can go to the Bronx.
Yeah.
But it's still not the same.
No.
It's just not the same. It just doesn't feel... And nothing tastes the same.
No.
Nothing's the same. So it's always been a lifelong goal for me to be back here.
Yeah.
And my wife and I have been talking about it, and we're moving in that direction. So,
good.
You know, we're here, you know, every few months. And, you know, we've recently rented an apartment.
Nice.
So we live in Atorre right now.
Super, super.
And I like Atorre.
Atorre is fine. Traffic, you know, every big city has traffic issues.
But so, you could actually walk there a little bit too, yeah. And you can walk to get something to eat. And yeah, the trolley's right there.
Yeah,
it's the a good train spot. Is right there. It's not that bad. The airport is right there.
Plaza Las Américas. Yeah, it's a good spot.
So we're immersing ourselves, and you know we're trying to come back. I'd love to see more Puerto Ricans come back.
Yeah.
But I am aware that you know there are limitations here, and there are things that are going on the island that make things you know tough. A little difficult. It's tough, you know, the light and the water.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you got to have faith that you know you're going to get through this. At some point, things are going to keep evolving. There's going to be, there's going to be more technology that's coming. If you look like people now, you know, people are trying to do like solar and water and wind. And, you know, it's just, I just worry about the people that are here, la gente, you know, like I don't want them to be displaced any more than they have been, you know?
We won't. I don't feel we won't be displaced. It's a matter of really rethinking, unlearning, making some other choices, political choices. We have to say that.
Yeah,
but I do have faith. I mean, there's a new generation that has a different mentality, different conscience. And I have faith. And in different moments, like your parents, civil rights movement, who thought I do have an uncle. And I remember when Obama was a candidate for president, and he told me, un negro nunca va a ser presidente.
Right.
Black paper, you know, okay.
In the mindset.
That's right. You. I beg to differ. And look what happened. So there's always possibilities.
Absolutely.
And I'm on that side of life. Optimistic. I have a 5-year-old son. I want to leave him the best Puerto Rico I can leave him.
Right.
Best world. And that's where we're at. In tennis, in pickleball, and in this podcast. So,
Julio,
we keep on talking. We can keep on talking, but I just want to thank you. This is a small gift.
Oh my God.
For you.
Thank you.
And before you leave, we have a small questionnaire that you just, it's like pickleball, really quick.
Okay.
Match point. Let's see. So, if you had to pick a sport, which one would be?
Pickleball.
Pickleball. That's easy.
Too easy.
Favorite pickleball player?
Now, that's hard. Right now, Hayden Pachaquin.
Where's he from? The States?
He's from California. He is a 19-year-old professional.
19-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he has future.
Yeah. And then my second favorite would be Federico Staxrud, and he's from Argentina.
From Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Cool. When you travel, window or aisle seat?
Window going,
aisle
seat coming back.
Really?
Yeah, because
why's that?
Okay, now you're going to see how crazy I am. Okay, because I want to see where I'm landing, where I'm going to, right? Especially when I come to the island, I always sit on the aisle seat.
Uh-huh.
And then when I'm going back home, I just want to get out of there. So I want to be on the aisle, and then
head out,
get my bag and go.
What music pumps you up?
Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny. Which one?
So, well, Debí tirar más fotos.
Super.
That's super, but I think all of his work is being great, is inspiring.
It is.
Obviously, I grew up listening to, you know, some of the salsa era, Gran Combo, you know, Hector Lavoe.
Por supuesto.
You know, so those guys, my mom is a salsera. She still is out there tearing it up. She is
good.
An unbelievable dancer. So is my wife.
I was going to say that she must dance. Your mother must dance.
My mother is a fantastic salsera. So I listen to those guys. And then I was actually, it's funny because I love reggaeton.
Mm.
I liked reggae. I love reggaeton. So I used to listen to like Nicki Jam. Back in the day. And Evie Queen.
Uh-huh.
And I love all those artists. But right now I'm listening to a little bit of Raul Alejandro, and then Bad Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Pretty much it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Favorite Puerto Rican food?
Well, the staple, arroz con gandules, con un pedazo de lechón, un pernil, con un pastel. That's, yeah. I mean, that's it. Maybe, you know, a side, un acapurrie.
Muy bien. Yeah.
El Puerto Rican. Bacalaito. Come on, I got it all, bro.
Okay, this is a tough question. Pasteles, with or without ketchup?
Sin ketchup, come on.
Yo eres mi equipo. Yo soy sin ketchup, señores.
I don't know where people got that from.
Me neither. No ketchup on the pasteles.
Yeah.
That's not crazy. Judging, I'm just saying.
No, I'm saying that's crazy. Man. I don't understand.
Yeah. Okay, so if you had like a magic wand, yeah, what would you change?
Boom. Mm-hmm. All the diaspora would be back here on the island.
Mm.
And we would have light. We'd have...
Yes.
We'd have water. We'd have education.
Mm.
We'd have the doctors back, the nurses. That's what I would do.
Completamente voto por eso también. A dream that you haven't achieved so far, that you would like to achieve?
A dream that I'm going to achieve is living here.
So. We'll be here with you, Julio.
Maybe we have a follow-up, right?
Of course. We're going to be.
Where is he now?
Where is he now? No, and I'm going to keep.
You know, we're doing it. Hablando más español.
Un poquito más español. That's a goal for you.
That's my
goal. My goal is to play more pickleball. Julio invited me, but then I was like, he's going to kick my ass.
No, I was going to show you.
I was going to show you.
We're going to teach you the way. And next time we will. I will. The whole studio, anybody, you guys are all invited.
So,
we'll do a class.
This is a deal. Next time, he's going to speak more Spanish and I'll improve my pickleball skills. Julio, gracias.
Placer.
Gracias por estar aquí con nosotros. National Treasure puertorriqueño que está en los top del pickleball en Estados Unidos. Sacó un tiempo para estar con nosotros. Te agradezco profundamente que estés aquí.
Thank you.
Puerto Rico es tu casa.
Thank
Así
you.
Que, y Raqueteando también es tu casa. Esto sigue creciendo. Ya verán muchas cosas pasando por ahí. Así que gracias por estar aquí.
Man, thank you for having me.
No, thank you, man. ¿Cómo estuvo mi inglés? ¿No estuvo mal? Pónganme ahí como creen. Yo creo que saqué A también contra. Lo hice bastante bien. Bueno, muchas gracias a todos, a todas. Nos vemos en el próximo episodio. Chao.